Jeff Evans, CEO of Disaster Relief Australia. Welcome to the Last Post podcast. How are you?
I'm well, Greg, surviving lockdown and just busy like everybody else.
Yeah. Jeff, it's been an amazing journey. If you could tell listeners and readers a bit about it, Disaster Relief actually morphed out of Team Rubicon, I believe, and tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. It's a really interesting model that did come out of the US, and it was based on a very simple premise that the best way to help a veteran is to actually ask them to help someone else. And if you think about the type of people that the military attracts, you go up to them, say, "Hey, I'm here to help you." You don't want to have a bar of it. But if I ask you to help someone else, they're out the door in a heartbeat. So this very simple idea started with two Marines that went down to Haiti after an earthquake there in 2010. Right. And they realized that their skills were fantastic. And the comments from one of those guys is that, you know, it looked just like Fallujah or any other battlefield that, you know, they had served in. And certainly if you look at some of the landscapes of Black Summer, you know, I often point out now that it does look like a war zone. And if you're trained for war or if you're operated in that environment, then you're ideally suited to work in a disaster zone. And then we found a couple of things when we brought the model to Australia. The first one we found is that the gap in what's called disaster recovery is actually huge. So most resources in Australia are geared towards response, police, fireys, AMBOs, SES, Rural Fire Service, and they do an incredible job. But once the fires go out and the floodwaters recede, they withdraw. And then there's actually nothing there. So we found that gap was something we could move into. Mm. The other gap we found was that we've just had the longest war in our nation's history and the first real war since Vietnam. So we've got all of these people coming out of the military. And indeed, you know, we've got people, including Vietnam veterans and all those that served in periods of peace, they've all still got the same skills, the same service ethos. And so there's this massive pool of talent there with incredible skills and incredible experience. And it was just not being used. So we took those latent skills and we put it to work in the disaster environment. It turns out that not only are the skills, as in leadership and the ability to just make things work ideal, but veterans are actually incredibly good at empathizing with people. So people who've just lost everything, they're completely overwhelmed by what they've been through, and veterans have proven to be amazing at talking to those people. And when we turn up to their property, you know, they will be completely overwhelmed, and we help them for a day or a few days to, you know, recover what can be recovered. And they often say to us, you know, there was a guy, for example, down in Cobargo recently, and he had lost everything, and he said, "I've been coming up to my property here for 3 months. And every time I come up here, I just sit here and cry. I just can't make a start on it." And he said, "You guys came in here and ripped through it in a day, recovered what could be recovered. And then, now I feel like I'm ready to move on." And it's the same I see everywhere we go. It's not that we can do everything for them. It's just that they're so overwhelmed. That first step is an exponential hurdle. And when we help them take that first step, they can take another. And then they can take another and another and so on. And then they're slowly on the road to recovery.
Ooh. Yeah, look, it's a beautiful story. I know that it comes from disaster, and that's the thing that people should remember. But there is a great recovery process that has been initiated by DRA in helping Australians recover, and I guess Asia Pacific too. So you go beyond Australia, but it works for the betterment of veterans also, Jeff. This is the gilt-edged beauty of it, is that veterans, it's definitely a good thing for them to be involved in.
Yeah, there's no question. So we often say veterans are the agents of our charity, not the recipients of it. And it's a very important model that we use, because when we first started doing this here, we looked at, well, do we provide additional welfare services to our people? And there's a real pushback from our members saying, no, we came here to serve and to help people. If we want to seek assistance, then we can go to Open Arms or DVA or Soldier On or some of those other organisations that provide that level of support. So we maintain the business focus of disaster relief. But really at the heart of everything we do is mental health. And DRA is one of the few places I know where you can get people standing around the campfire at the end of a day, you know, and they might be having a conversation along the lines of, you know, I've been buggered for years and now I'm seeing this psych and I'm doing better. You should go and see him. That is a positive conversation about mental health. And I often say, I don't know anywhere else you can get a group of alphas standing around talking about mental health in a positive way, you know. So whilst our business focus always remains on, well, what can you do? And, you know, veterans just have this phenomenal skill set. in the background, we're always working to support people, and we will plug them into mental health services and other opportunities anywhere we can. So we don't take the view that, oh, these are our veterans and, you know, you can't have them. It's, is there another opportunity that we can get people involved in that's good for them? And if it's good for them, it's good for us, because we only exist for our members. So we're always looking for an opportunity for any individual member to engage in anything that interests them and is of benefit to them, whether that's community service, whether it's service with the DRA, whether it's opportunities through the RSL or Soldier On or Lions or whatever. You know, it's about getting them back into life. One of the things that I know, before I did this job, Greg, I ran Homes for Heroes, and it was a program that looked after homeless veterans, right? So people who are very much the most unwell veterans out there, just facing significant challenges in their recovery. And it, Homes for Heroes is quite well resourced by the time I left it. But the missing piece of the puzzle, we could provide them food and clothing and treatment and anything they needed, but purpose, a reason to get up in the morning, was the one thing that always really eluded me. And whilst I tried to get them involved in different things, it was always a real challenge. And when I left Homes for Heroes in about 2016, I was actually going to go and work in the corporate world somewhere. I had no idea doing what. But a friend of mine who is the chief operating officer, Marcus Busey, said, hey, come and have a look at this organization called Team Rubicon. They're getting these guys and sending them into disaster zones. I'm like, wow, that's right up my alley. And the more I looked at it, the more I realized, well, here's an organization that only offers one thing, and that is the opportunity to continue to serve. So service of above self, you know, serving communities, continuing to serve, because we all put our hand up to serve. Everyone in the military volunteered. No one was conscripted. So service is in the blood. They need an opportunity to serve. And when they go out into the field and they see the difference, you go back to that guy in Cabargo, turns up, you know, he's a broken shell of an individual, often in tears. Mm. By the end of the day, that same person is kicking the can around, laughing, joking, getting engaged in the normal banter that veterans, you know, hang on each other all day long. And they're a totally different person. And those veterans see the change that they made to that person's life. And there is no other feeling like it.
Isn't it? That's just so wonderful. Just so wonderful, Jeff. And you hit on a note there, of course, because in the Australian Defence Force, you're sent to conflicts. You know, there's no way around it to defend democracy. And at the same time, it is a great service that you provide for the protection of the Australian community. But going beyond that, to serve here at home is a great reminder of the extension of service that can be provided by veterans.
Yeah, it is. And it's something we're very much focused on, making it a well-worn path well before you leave defence. So, you know, people move into transition, and we know that transition is a real struggle point for people in their recovery. So, you know, DRA already works with defence on the ground during disasters. You know, we've done that with floods, we've done that with fires. We're already working well together. So now the key is to take it to the next level, where people in defence already know about DRA. They've seen us on the ground. They know about us when they move into transition, and they've got work experience opportunities and things like that. They're doing it with DRA, and that idea of continued service to the nation just becomes a natural flow. So that's where I would like to see us head.
Yeah. Look, you say, of course, 2016 from Homes for Heroes, and then into Team Rubicon, which became obviously what it is now, Disaster Relief Australia. It didn't take you long to get off the ground, because you had Proserpine, I think, was it in 17 or a few months later?
Yeah, I think we held the first board meeting in October 2016, and then Proserpine, Cyclone Debbie hit North Queensland in April. So it was 4 or 5 months there with just a handful of volunteers, and we launched. We put 43 people on the ground for about 2.5 weeks, which was actually a really big effort. And the important thing about that is that it was still an untested concept here, you know, using veterans in disaster relief. And it proved to be everything that we thought it would be, and about 1,000 times more. So if you go back just 4.5 years, you know, 43 people over 2 weeks, and we were just exhausted as an organization. So move forward 3 years into Black Summer, we were running 5 operations concurrently. I can't remember how many people we deployed, 700 or 800. This year, so in the first 6 months of 2021, even with COVID, you know, we've deployed over 500 people on multiple operations all over the country. So our footprint went from zero, really, to 43 in Proserpine, and now we've got standing disaster relief teams in Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, Townsville. We just launched in Perth off the back of the fires there. We launched in Adelaide off the back of the fires. And in the next 6 months, we'll move into Darwin. And then at the in the first 6 months of 22, we'll go into Hobart, and that'll give us a national footprint.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that too, Jeff. And I guess after the success of what was done at Proserpine gave you some confidence to move on. And then we had bushfires, of course, and COVID. Have you been coping with these challenging times? It's quite first the bushfires and then COVID. How's DRA coping?
So when Black Stummer started, our capability as an organisation, remember, we were a very, very small organisation, was really to run one operation. And an operation is putting, you know, 50 to 60 people on the ground over about putting waves of 30 to 40 people on the ground over 4 or 5 weeks. So whatever that tallies up to. And then finishing that operation, capable of conducting another operation and not being completely exhausted. But when Black Summer occurred, we had to completely change the way we were structured and then ramp up to run multiple operations, then multiple concurrent operations. And as I said, by the end of it, we were running 5 operations, 3 major fire operations and some smaller ones. And then COVID hit in about March, I think, and just brought it all to a screaming halt. Now, we did some COVID relief work out of Victoria, where we were assisting the government and some other agencies with nursing homes and with the big blocks of community housing that got locked down there. We've done bits and pieces of COVID work in Sydney, just supporting where we can. It's not really our bread and butter, but particularly where expertise around things like operations, logistics, planning, that sort of stuff, which veterans do really, really well, we've been able to provide assistance. Then we came out of lockdown and the Perth Hills fire happened. Whilst the Perth Hills fire happened, the flooding occurred up in mid New South Wales. And whilst all of that was going on, we're actually still doing work in Bega and Yurrabidalla, which is southeast New South Wales. Now, 15 months after the fires, we are still finding people in cars. You know, and I don't mean just a few. There are so many people still hurting down there, and you know, nothing's really been done. They're remote and isolated. It's not really anyone's fault. People often ask, well, why are people still in cars? And a lot of these houses are built off the grid, or they're in remote areas, and they might have missed the opportunity to apply for grants and apply for assistance, usually because they just didn't know. Government, remember, is a very big, crude instrument, and often where there was a need and a resource, they just couldn't find each other for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And so we're down there assisting still. I think we could probably continue with Black Summer forever. We've 3 times delayed operations in Mallacoota down in East Gippsland. That's the place where people were evacuated by the Navy. Due to COVID. And we saw this actually in the flooding in mid-north New South Wales as well. The problem they've got now is that where the fence lines were burnt out, there's now a lot of green growth that's occurred. So instead of just normally we'd clear a fence line, because if we can clear the boundary line, they can restock the property. But there's this huge green waste problem now. So, you know, what was let's clear it now becomes a massive, you've got to go clear all this, green waste away before we can chop the burnt trees to refence the property. So it's got an exponentially bigger issue, you know, and it's just a problem that hasn't been tackled.
Incredible. Look, you've got a magnificent team there at Disaster Relief Australia, and I've been lucky enough to communicate with Karen and Sarah there in Adelaide. What makes veterans so uniquely suited to this role?
Now, the first thing I'll say about the team is DRA is actually a really small organisation. We run on the smell of an oily rag. And I say to my team often, we don't have any resources. We don't have money. We don't have loads of equipment. What we have is people, exceptional people. And the reason we've been able to succeed is because of the people. And I often say I've got the best trained volunteer workforce in the world. Now, because we're new, one of the challenges to veterans is that we actually rely on their skill and experience to pull it together on the ground. Now, over time, you know, we've gotten a lot better with our process, with our equipment, with all that sort of stuff. But we are still relying on veterans to use their skill and experience, to use their initiative, just like they would have in the military, to make things work. Because I know if I send, a dozen veterans into any area in Australia after a disaster, they will do something, and they will do something good. Over time, we've developed our process so that I can anticipate what they're doing, so that I can be forward loading them with resources. But it's really about empowering the team leader on the ground to make a decision. And what we say to them is, if you make a decision that's consistent with our values and was, made in good faith, then right or wrong, we've got your back. And we take that leadership ethos into everything we do, empower the leader on the ground to get things done, and they are able to get things done. And that is what brings people into DRA.
Yeah, this is the magnificent thing about Disaster Relief Australia, Jeff Evans, because the people involved are used to taking orders, they're used to giving orders, they're used to working to a timeline, and there's very little there that's being done that's not done properly. I mean, it's a great thing you're doing. What's the future hold, Jeff? I know Asia Pacific beckons. What do you see the role happening there?
So we actually run a humanitarian award for our work in Sulawesi after the tsunami hit the island of Palu in Indonesia, where we sent an aerial damage assessment team, so a drone team up there, and they mapped it for the Indonesian government. And that has been something that the World Health Organization, a few other organizations have expressed interest in us continuing. Of course, COVID just made it very hard. We've also got an MOU in place with the Philippines government. We've been providing training to them, both on the ground and then, since COVID, online training. So Asia Pacific will remain on the radar. It's just difficult with COVID, but whenever a disaster occurs up there, we will respond. And whether that's an aerial damage assessment team, I would like in time for us to have a fairly refined medical assistance capability, but that's all still under development. We'll see where it goes. In terms of in Australia, there's an interesting thing happening. There's a recognition slowly dawning across the nation that people have a right to take part in their own recovery. So we this sort of got kicked off after the Brisbane floods in 2011, where what they called the Mud Army turned up, and that was just hundreds of people turning up every day to help their neighbors and help the neighborhood. Yeah, but in some cases, the Mud Army would move in and gut a house before the homeowner had the chance to come back. So that spontaneous volunteering was what they call it, is something we're increasingly being asked to help manage. And what we find is that veterans, they're all inherently leadership trained. They lead well. And if you lead the Sponbol Army well, then it can be a significant asset. So increasingly, I think over time, you'll see groups of veterans in charge of large groups of spontaneous volunteers. And they're the community that turns up and just want to help. And then there's the other sort of end of the spectrum, which is the technical edge, where we're already starting to move in and map vulnerable communities. And it's very interesting because it's essentially an intelligence preparation of the battlefield. The military's been doing this stuff for thousands of years, where you look at the threats, look at the assets, identify what you want to protect, and then figure out how to protect it. Now, soldiers or anyone in the ADF does that really well, and we're starting to do that in vulnerable communities to assist them with resilience, which is mitigate, let's try and reduce the damage or prepare, i.e. it's coming, let's reduce the risk of what's going to happen. So we'll move to sort of a year-round focus of not just moving in disaster recovery after the events, but getting communities ready. And if you look at all of the inquiries, so each state did an inquiry after the Black Summer, and then there was the Royal Commission. They all basically said the same thing, and that is that people can't expect to have a fire truck parked out the front of their house in a major disaster in the future. So the focus has got to shift to resilience. Now, everyone talks about resilience. No one ever says what it is. We think we've got a pretty good understanding of not only what resilience is, but how it can be achieved. And so we're working now towards putting that into effect on the ground.
Yeah, we're running out of time, Jeff, but I will say this much. It's been quite a brilliant scenario and an object lesson for Australians to follow, a mentorish thing that you're doing from the following on from the two people in America, the two veterans in America that started. And we thank you so much for this. What's your call out to veterans? Are you after more veterans to get involved?
Always. So our member model actually allows people to join DRA today, deploy tomorrow for a week, and then we might never see you again. Because what we know is the people we're after, we're all busy, you know. So you don't have to join DRA and turn up every Tuesday night for training and then every second weekend. You can drift in and drift out as it suits you because you're already trained, you know. There's actually not much I can teach a veteran. Now, we do have a lot of training opportunities in, you know, things like chainsaw and incident management and stuff like that, but you don't need to do it because they're already ideally trained. So yeah, we're always looking for more veterans, people who are looking to serve communities, mm-hmm. and you know, for those who take that challenge, it's everything and more. It's all got all the best bits of defense without the difficult bits, and I can only, you know, recommend it very, very highly to people looking for purpose in their life.
Well, that's fantastic. So there you are, veterans. Contact Disaster Relief Australia, and let's see what we can do. And let's continue this happening, and we'll run with you, and we'll keep an eye on you, and let the rest of Australia know about you. It's been a fantastic opportunity to speak, Jeff Evans from Disaster Relief Australia. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for the opportunity.